And we saw that the partition function can be written as the trace of this transfer matrix to the n, where n is the number of spins, and t as this expression okay. So what we want to do now is to show how we can compute easily correlation functions using the transfer matrix. And then we will show how to what is the scaling limit. And finally, look at the, how we can map a classical model into a, a quantum mechanical model. So what is the this famous classical to quantum mapping. And then we will also do the reverse for the model in 2D. Okay, so we want to compute this quantity that is sigma z at the site I, sigma z at the site j. The expectation value of this. I can also put this here because this is a classical model, so there is no difference between using these objects or these variables. I am just saying that in a given spin configuration, so that is labeled by I, this is what it is, right? It's an eigenstate in the spin configuration. Okay, so this is what we want to compute. And you know that this object is 1 over z, the trace of e to the minus h sequence of I, sequence of j. Okay. So this is the classical expectation value for the correlation function. Okay, so let's see if we can use some tricks. Okay, so first of all, let me write this object in this way. I can write it as the product of two matrices. One is this one, and the other one is this one. And I will define the first one, T1, and the second one, T2. So notice that T1 is nothing but e to the lambda sigma z. And T2 is e to the k times the identity. So this takes care of this part, plus e to the minus 2k, because I pulled this out, sigma x, right? This takes care of the off-diagonal. OK. Well, now because we know, so these are just numbers, right? Because we're in a classical mode. And so we know what is the expression for the partition function because it's here. So what we can write this object like is 1 over z. And 1 over z, OK, so yesterday we also saw that we can diagonalize t. And the eigenvalues are lambda 1, lambda 2. And this is e to the k And then we have cos lambda plus minus sin h square lambda that e to, plus e to the minus 4k. Okay? And so, of course, the z is just equal to lambda 1 to the n plus lambda 2 to the n. Do you agree with this? Okay. So here we have lambda 1 to the n plus lambda 2 to the n. Okay. And now we have t to the n that I can write in this way. And okay. I have the trace of this. Okay, so we work out now the solution of this object for a simpler case for h equals 0. So just for the pure rising part with this, without this, yep.
I'm not sure that matrix multiplication is quite right. It gives you the wrong off-diagonal element, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right. So okay, so for let me, so now I forgot the expression. Okay, I will recover it later. Okay, thank you. So anyway, I want to work out the expression for this case, which also means that lambda is equal to 0, so that our matrix is just what I called T2 before, because lambda is 0. Then later we recover the correct expression. Okay. So we have this thing. Okay. So one thing that I can do, because the trace is cyclic, I can pull this thing here. And now T2 to the n, I can write it as T2 to the n minus I, T2 to the I minus j, T2 to the j, like this. So these two parts will commute with the sigma z, so I can put them like that. And now we have T2n minus I. with the trace. Okay, so a convenient basis to compute this quantity is the basis in which T2 is diagonal. And this basis is this basis, plus minus. You can verify that. And actually, the eigenvalues of T2 plus minus are lambda 1, 2. So you can verify this. Okay? But now, so in this basis, sigma z is not diagonal anymore, but it is this one. Okay? So these are just diagonal matrices. So for instance, this one is lambda 1 n minus I, lambda 2 n minus I. And these are these two matrices. Okay, so if you do this multiplication, put things together, you find something of this form. And then we have okay, something like this. If we take the thermodynamic limit, so n going to infinity, one can show that this quantity, so that is the correlation function Cij, is just the hyperbolic tangent of k to the I minus j. Yeah.
I think for the line that you have up there, the last step, sigma z doesn't commute with T2.
Yeah, no, no, right, but it so you have to look. So this is a matrix on the jth spin. Okay, so it commutes with all the T2s that are not involved with the jth spins. That's why I can do it like this. It's on a different Hilbert space. It's here, right? It is as if you had. Now, this will commute with this, but will not commute with this one.
But, however, when you write T2 to the n, it's not the tensor product of T2.
N times, right? It's just that notation.
It's not, it's just.
So, still, I mean.
So, but it is. So,
T2 to the n is the product of all these matrices.
Sigma z acting on side j and sigma z acting on side I, neither both commute with T2. I mean, T2 is something that's acting just in a C2 space, right?
Oh, example, now T is the counteract on one of the pairs. So
yeah,
you have one.
Correct.
So you have so and each of the T2s are passing one of the pairs. No, two of the snaps, two of the sticks, but you
think
have
so, though. I think that's just, I mean that's just how you interpret it as you move along the chain, but that's just
T2 is just a 2x2 matrix. It doesn't, I mean, you know where T2 acts either on side J or side I.
I mean, it, neither. It's not an operator, right?
Right.
Well, the thing is, you have to add the identities in some way because
so,
sigma I is that is a 2 to the n by 2 to the n matrix.
Yeah, this thing that we are treating T2 as if it is, as if every T2 is acting on a single spin. And yeah, I didn't justify that. Huh.
We saw that by computing the partition function, but in this case, I'm summing over configurations on the side I and side j that
yeah.
might not let me
mm-hmm.
write everything in terms
mm-hmm.
of the transformation.
Yes.
So I don't know if there's I'm confused in that step as well. That's why I write it.
That is just the same step than yesterday.
Maybe if you treat it as a tensor product, you do have the proper dimensionality to have everything on the diagonal be an individual.
So I am treating it as a tensor product, and yeah, I should justify it. I right now I don't see it, but yes, we are treating it as a tensor product. So let's leave it like this for the moment. Where was I? Okay. So now we want to see the scaling limit. Okay. So what we want to do is to define large length scales and small length scales and try to write everything in terms of the large length scales because we want to believe that the small length scales do not matter. So in order to do that, we look at our lattice. Where the spins are labeled by L. And we embed our lattice in the continuum. So we have a lattice spacing that is called A. So we now can define a continuous coordinate, tau, that is A times L. OK. So in terms of these coordinates, if I now define this quantity psi to the minus 1 being 1 over A log cot h k. Right, yeah. Then my Cij in terms of the coordinate tau, so I consider I being a tau and a j being 0, becomes just e to the minus tau over psi. Okay, so this is one important result. We see that as long as we have a gap, so pretty much as long as k is finite, then this quantity is finite. Okay? and correlation functions decay exponentially. But now you see that for large k, psi may diverge, does diverge, actually. But by large, I mean really in the limit. Well, but since the couplings of the theory must always be finite, large k really what it means large beta. So we know that the phase transition is at t equals 0 means beta infinity for this model. So it will diverge and this expression will not be valid or anymore, will become a power law. However, as long as for large beta but not infinity, psi is very large and in particular is much larger than A. So we can look at this quantity, psi over A, and this is approximately equal to 2 to the, so let me write it like this, A over psi e to the minus 2k. You just develop in series this one. Okay, so this is one of our scaling quantities. So this is small and this is large. So this quantity, as you can see, consistently is very small in the large k limit. Okay, so what are the other, so psi over A is a large scale quantity. What are the other large scale quantity? Well, we have the total size of the system, L, that is just the number of spins times A. And finally, okay, in order to write everything, we also need a scaling parameter that contains H. And there is no straightforward way to know. So this is model dependent. What is the right quantity to define for H? You just have to try until you find the right one that gives you a nice scaling. And we will consider this one. So just the average field per spin. Is the field averaged on this length? Okay, so with some manipulation, now we can compute. So we can insert these quantities inside lambda 1 and lambda 2. And consider the case in which A is very small, so small a, and large psi. So this is the scaling limit. And lambda 1, lambda 2 become, in the scaling limit, become this quantity. So scaling limit is A small, psi large. Okay. Then using some, there is a bit of algebraic manipulation, then we can compute again the energy density, the free energy density, but this time in the scaling limit. And we have a constant that is minus k over A. Then we have 1 over L, log 2 cos L okay. And you can find some analogous expression for C of tau. I can actually give it. And it is e to the minus tau of xi plus e to the minus l minus tau of xi. 1 plus e to the minus l over xi. Okay. So now we can, so we see that these functions are functions of just the ratios between large scales and small scales. So in particular, you see that the free energy density is a function of the ratio between L and Xi. And the product between L and H tilde. Right? And then in an analogous way, this is a function of, let me see, again, L over Xi and tau over Xi. Okay. So now we can say exactly what we mean by universality. The assertion of universality is that these functions are universal functions. This means that if you change a little bit the Hamiltonian and you do again the scaling limit, you find exactly the same functional form. So for example, if we added a term in our Ising model in which we would also have SI plus 2, so next nearest neighbors. Well, so you see what is the intuition. It is not really different from before. It's now we have just doubled the lattice spacing. Okay, there is another term that is just with a double lattice spacing, but the lattice spacing should not appear at all when we take the limit in which A is very, very small. So one can do that and work out all the calculations and find exactly the same. Okay. So let me collect the quantities that I need now. Okay. So the quantities that we need in the scaling limit are this one equal 0 equal minus k over a and the lambda equal a h tilde. Okay. So now we are ready to see the mapping from classical to quantum. Okay. So our transfer matrix T in this limit can be written, and yeah, so definitely this is the right expression, though, in this way. So there is some algebra to do on that expression for T over there, where lambda is AH tilde, and then e to the k, e to the minus 2k is this. So if you do all the substitution correctly and you develop sigma x for small a, you can write it in this way. Okay. So, in fact, so I stand corrected. In the scaling limit, now I can write T as this product, T1, T2. Okay. Very good. Okay. So now remember that A is small. So usually when you have T, sorry, if you have, so this is E to some operator times E to some other operator. So we usually like to write exponentials in this way, right? And this is true when O1 and O2 are numbers. However, when they are matrices, they do not commute, so this is not true anymore. But the error that you make is of the order of a square. Okay? So because we are in the scaling limit where a is very small, we are very happy to make this error. It's not a problem. So I can write this as e to the a, and then I just put these terms together. Now I can decide. Okay. Sometimes people like to call psi to the minus one, they like to call it delta, because reminds us of the gap. And we will see this is actually the gap of the quantum theory. Okay, so this just becomes delta over two. Okay, so now you see that I can define a quantum Hamiltonian, HQ, that is just this one. This is the quantum Hamiltonian for a single quantum spin. Right? There is no index here. It's just one single quantum spin. And it's quantum. Here you have operators that do not commute. And A is basically tau, right? So I see that the transfer matrix is, I believe there is a minus somewhere. Or at least I can pull out a minus. So the transfer matrix. I can just pull it out. So these signs here don't really matter, right? And probably there was a number of sign mistakes already in the expressions. Yeah.
When you go to the scaling limit, somehow the microscopic details of your system don't matter, right? But then if I'm defining the quantum Hamiltonian in this way, shouldn't the microscopic details matter for the quantum Hamiltonian? Because it appears to be the same that if I'm just in a,
this is a very good question. So the answer is no.
So if you, started with a slightly different Hamiltonian, you would find the same quantum Hamiltonian when you do the scaling. And yes, in a second, I will say more about this. So now let me tell you that the transfer matrix, that is what is helping you to, so what does the transfer matrix do? Is actually to relate the configuration of the spin here to the spin here. So in this sense, so I didn't prove it and I just assumed it, but actually the transfer matrix is defined on the spin. So in fact, actually yesterday we saw that, right? That the transfer matrix had matrix elements that were SI, SI plus one. So it is actually a tensor product. Yeah.
But it says nothing about whether I'm on a equally spaced chain or.
Right, no, this is to answer to your previous question.
Okay. That
we can write it as a product in that way. The fact that if you change the Hamiltonian, then you would end up with the same quantum Hamiltonian, it's true. I mean, I didn't show it, but it is true. So if you do it, you find the same Hamiltonian. So we see that the transfer matrix that relates a spin at I with a spin at I plus one can be seen as the evolution in imaginary time of a single spin. Okay? It's like seeing how this spin evolves in imaginary time. So it's like a rotation in space-time. Okay, so let's look at the partition function. So the partition function, of course, is the trace of t to the n. But this is the trace of e to the minus hq. Then we have a. And then this is to the n, right? Okay, but this is L, right? We defined L as A times N. Okay, so now we are ready to define our last quantity. We define an inverse temp, we say that L is an inverse temperature. So we have the trace of e to the minus hq over t. So this is the last result for the quantum classical quantum mapping. It says the partition function of the classical model is equal to the partition function of the corresponding quantum model at a temperature, inverse temperature, that is the total size of the system. So these mappings are extremely useful because they allow us to compute results from one way of seeing things and using them in the other way. For instance, if we wanted to compute the free energy from the quantum side, so F is just minus T log Z, Well, now this is easy because we just need the eigenvalues of HQ. So the, but this Hamiltonian is a 2x2 matrix. So it's very easy to diagonalize. In fact, the eigenvalues of HQ are E1, E2, equal to 0 plus minus H squared delta plus delta over 2 squared. So now you see why delta is the gap. At zero field gives us exactly the splitting of E0. And so if I plug this expression inside F, we will get E0 minus T log 2 cosh delta 2 squared plus h tilde squared over t. And this is the same expression that we obtain from the scaling limit if you just compare the quantities. Okay, so of course, they have the same partition function, so they must have the same free energy density. It's very easy to compute in this way. So the jargon is HQ is the scaling theory for H Isaac. Yep.
Last time you said that we didn't care whether the chain was a circle or was an infinite chain. But in it appears that it completely depends on the size of the chain, right?
Yeah, on the size, but not on the boundary conditions.
If I have the infinite chain, then it's like having the quantum system at zero temperature. But if I have a finite chain.
Oh, no, that is very true. So
everything here is true in the scaling limit. The scaling limit is large L. Large L and small a. So when L is very large, you don't care about the boundary conditions. OK, so now I have 15 more minutes. So let's try to. Now let's look at the 2D Ising model. OK? So the 2D Ising model. Oh, OK, so before this, so we saw that the 1D classical StatMac, OK, where there is no time, but there is space, is mapped onto the 0D quantum imaginary time evolution. So this special coordinate became the imaginary time. So now, if we have the 2D Ising model, we should expect that one of these coordinates becomes the imaginary time coordinate, and the other one stays special. So we have to choose which. We choose it using the couplings. So you see that the way tau behaves depends on how we did the scaling limit for A. So if we want to do the classical to quantum mapping for the 2D Ising model, we cannot use the isotropic Ising model. We must have the Ising model in 2D in which we have some couplings in one direction, some other couplings in the other direction. And we do the scaling limit in one of these directions. OK, so now that we know that in order to do the 2D classical StatMac, it will become the 1 plus 1D quantum mechanical, the easier way to do it is to do reverse engineering. So we already know the answer. So just let's see if the answer works. So we start with the quantum Hamiltonian now of the 1D Ising mode. I put X. Okay. All right. So now imagine that we want to evolve this object in some imaginary time A or tau, whatever. Let me call it A. So what is the operator that evolves in imaginary time? It's just this. Okay. So we want to write this object as a transfer matrix. And we want to use the same tricks as before. So we would like to write this thing as a T1 times T2 plus a small corrections in terms of A square. And when we consider A being very small, it will work. OK, so what is our best guess? Well, our best guess is that the exponential of this is T1 and the exponential of this is T2. Yeah, they do not commute, but who cares, because it's taken care from this. OK, so T1. Is just the exponential of jg. I have to put an a though, right? In order to have this expression. All right. Okay. So what is the partition function for the quantum Hamiltonian? So it is e to the minus h over t, right? As before. And but t, 1 over t is what in the end will be L. Okay? So now let's, because now we have two dimensions, so we have to be careful. Let me say that M is the number of spins. Okay? So we have a length in the spatial direction that, if you want, L space is M times A. But this is the inverse temperature that is related to the length in the imaginary time direction. So this is what I would like to call L tau. Okay. And then we break this in many little pieces that have spacing A, because this is the time direction. So this will be N A. So this N has nothing to do with this M. This is the number of spins, and this is the number of steps we do in the A direction. OK, so I guess I have to go here. OK, so this just becomes the trace of e to the minus h ah to the N. Okay. Okay. And this is, okay, so let me go here. So Z is the trace of T1, T2 to the N. So now we have to evaluate this object and see if it becomes, if this become the transfer matrix of the 2D Ising model, okay? Okay, so again, we have to choose a basis. So this time, I choose the basis of sigma z. Okay, so this basis, I call it like this. So these are just the spin configurations. So this is a cat, for instance, 0, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0. Okay, it's just a spin configuration. So obviously, T2, that only contains sigma z, is diagonal here. Okay, and so T2 on this vector is just what it is, e to the minus ja sigma I, sigma z I, plus 1, sigma z. These are just the plus 1 and the minus 1 that I read out from the spin configuration. OK, so this is. So we get that. So what is more complicated because is the matrix element of T1. OK. So before seeing what matrix element we need, let's expand this object. So Z is what? It's the trace. So it's the sum over all the spins configuration. And now I have to be careful because this trace I'm summing over all the spins configurations for the time direction. So I have to label them in another way. I label these slices in the time direction by L. OK? And then this is the product of L from 1 to N. And we have T1, T2. That is evaluated in sigma z I at L. This is a configuration. And so remember, T was evaluated between SI and SI plus 1. And this I at that time was the time direction. So this must be evaluated between SZ I L and SI L plus 1. So we know that how T2 behaves when it acts on these objects, regardless of the label L. Okay? So this just becomes a number. Okay? So we are left with the matrix element of T1 between this and this. Okay? So we want to. Well, these have to be computed by brute force, but it's not too bad because this is just a 2x2 matrix. And the answer is something that has this form, A e to the B S Z I L. S Z I L plus 1. Okay. Where A and B have this form. So A is cosh 2 G G A and B actually E to the minus 2 B is equal to hyperbolic tangent of JGA. So instead of diagonalizing, you can just verify that this works. OK, so if we put everything together, what we obtain is that Z is the sum over all the spins configuration. Here I forgot the I. And we have the exponential of the sum over both I and L of, okay, JA sigma Z I at L sigma Z I plus 1 at L, because this it is this term, plus this other thing, that it is B sigma Z I L sigma Z I L plus 1. And there is some overall normalization in terms of A that we are just, we don't care. Can you read there? Oh, let me see. Okay, so we are almost done. Well, because now you can see that this thing, we can just define minus H as this sum. So in fact, let me just. Call this thing minus H. And this is minus H I in 2D. You see? I have sigma Z in the I direction with couplings J. JA, and in the L direction with couplings B. And they are not the same. Okay? We should not expect them to be the same, because in one direction we did the continuous, the scaling limit, and the other one we didn't. Okay. So this is true in general. We can always, using the scaling limit, map a classical model in a quantum model. This is quite useful. So, okay, we can stop here. Questions? So you have done already the perturbation theory, right? And you have found what is the critical point in using perturbation theory, right? So it's a G equal 1. So there are two more ways of finding what is the critical point. One is to solve the model exactly and see exactly where the gap vanishes. And then there is a more elegant way, because it's easier, to find the critical point, and it is a method that uses what is called duality. And so tomorrow there are no classes, right? So Friday we start with that. I'll show you the duality of this model.